We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Trying not to score everything with about 30 threes or something.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of felt that. We kind of feed off that energy.
This place is amazing. Like, I really love Duke, and I love the atmosphere I'm in here.
Mark Williams, beast mode. Paolo, first half, he had the cramping stuff. Fair enough. Beast mode.
We back.
Yes.
How to get the screen, man? I'm struggling today. It's been a minute. Crazy cast. I don't even know how to start this anymore. How do we start the crazy cast?
Check out my home field apparel shirt.
Oh yeah,
the go new get Duke it. Drop. Right, go check this it. Out. Look at this. This is new old. Drop. This is from Duke, 1978, 1979. That's when Ryan's memes are from. So, you know, you got to use the code CRAZY, CRAZIE, get a discount for this new Duke drop. It's great. Everything's awesome. You guys are funny.
And for everybody else watching, UConn fans, UNC fans, you can use that code too. Get some free stuff for yourself, man. You know, it's all good. It's all good. Everybody wins. But yeah, we're back. It's been 2-3 weeks? Yeah, you know, everyone traveling. Ryan just, you know, hunting Russ and Phoenix and stuff. but we're back. We're back. Big win, man. Duke is starting to click. What is that? Let me do the math. 29? That's 29. Yeah, that's 29. 29-point win today on the road at Miami. A reversal of last year. Like last year we lost by 22, so. Hey, man, that's that 5-6 in a row?
That's 5 in a row, baby.
5 in a row, man. How y'all feeling, man? Ryan, we'll start us off.
It's just nice to, like, as of tonight, it's just nice to have a comfortable road win for one. I don't want to say for once, but it feels like it's been a long time since Duke's gone on the road against any ACC opponent and just handled business. So, great to see. The one thing I want to call out is guard play tonight. I feel like that was above what we've seen recently outside of a McCain and Roach game. Foster contributed, Proctor looked okay. And so just a fun game to watch from basically start to finish. They went on that, was it like 13 or 15-0 run in the first half and really never looked back. And obviously Miami down a couple of players, just kind of a game where you have to go in and just keep the pedal to the metal. And they did that. And it seemed like this season they haven't done that a lot and keeping that foot on the gas. And they did. They never let Miami really get back into contention. So a great sign. And I'm great. I'm a happy fan watching this team go 2-0 on this road trip so far. The biggest test coming on Saturday. And I just don't think this team had every reason to look past Miami down pack. And Cleveland was out too, right? I don't think did he end up playing? No.
Yeah. Okay. No, he was out.
I didn't have sound on, so wasn't able to hear that. But to go into a shorthand Miami team, could have let it get to you and look past to Saturday at Wake, and they didn't at all. And so just from a fan standpoint, happy they took care of business, a stress-free win. And I feel like a couple guys might have gotten a little bit of confidence back. So I'm all for that and a big W today.
Go ahead, Russ. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, fifth win in a row, I think fifth cover in a row, if I'm not mistaken, too, which is nice. Right. I mean, it'd be pretty easy to, like, dismiss a lot of what we've accomplished, you know, recently in terms of 3 of the 5 teams we played were bad. In fact, I'd say 4 of the 5 teams were bad.
And then Wake Forest obviously didn't have Efton Reed for like the whole game, although that was because of Duke's play in large part. But there are like circumstances where you can go, well, yeah, Duke's supposed to go 5-0. But that said, it's harder to actually do the thing that you're supposed to do than like it's easier said than done, right? Like winning is everything, and Duke is winning, and Duke is winning to expectation or better. You can't ask for much better than that, especially today. Look, Miami is down two starters, right? And I still see on my feed all the time people say, oh, well, the Duke lost to Pitt. Duke was down two starters. It's like that game doesn't even count, right? Well, Miami is way worse than Duke, and Miami was down two starters. So Duke is supposed to win sizably. So it's great to see that we actually did. You absolutely love to see that. And I mean, winning games all in a row, even if like there were frustration stretches in some of the previous games, a few frustration performances in some of the previous games, winning cures a lot. Like winning helps build, even right. If it's not perfect, winning is good. That's my hot take here, is that winning is good. So all of the individual performances here, I mean, you can go down the line. I'm sure we'll talk about some of them as we go, but like more important than anything else, as Ryan said, we needed to win two out of three of this road stretch. Like that was non-negotiable. We've already done that going into the hardest game on Saturday. And that's just really awesome to see. That makes me feel really good as a Duke fan.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit it on the head with winning cures all. I know a lot of people kind of what I think tweeted a couple games ago. It doesn't matter how you win. Just continue to stack wins, because the more you continue to stack wins, the more you build chemistry, the more confidence you have. And if you're winning those games while playing ugly basketball, when you do start to click, it might get scary like tonight. So, you know, I think a lot of people were too critical of, you know, us winning by a couple points or us winning ugly during the stretch, when, you know, all that matters is the W at the end of the day. And, you know, they're stacking wins right now. They're building confidence. You know, they could have easy, like I think Ryan said, easy let up tonight. You know, it's at Miami. We typically play horribly at Miami. And, you know, two starters were out. They pounded them from start to finish, like wire to wire win. And I think, you know, biggest takeaway for me tonight was the guard play. You know, I'm still obviously people may say UConn. I know Rob may be watching. He may say UConn has the best guards in the country. But I think when we're playing our best, like when our guards are all peaking at the same time, there's nobody has better guard group in the country. Like, I just don't think so, especially when you have, at this point, Tyrese Proctor or Caleb Foster off the bench. We'll talk about that later with that situation. But I just feel like, you know, we have the best guards in America when they're all on. And, you know, you can't beat Duke when the guard play is playing as well as they did tonight. So, you know, that was my biggest takeaway for tonight.
Yeah, and I think like looking at this team, and like there's been some negativity around it, and I feel like there hasn't been many of these blowout wins, and I don't expect them to win by 30 every single night, but like a little bit more handedly would be fine by me. But if you would have told us that with two games to go in February we would be 21-5, I feel like the majority of Duke fans would be like, deal, I think I'm in for that. And so I think it's always been with us, just like the way that they've won and or just the way that they've played has always looked a little bit disconcerting. So like seeing them come out tonight doing what they have makes me optimistic as well. Also, I would never have bet that Tyrese Proctor would have tied for the lead with us tonight and shots taken. Like shooting Tyrese Proctor came out with a concussion, maybe not even sure he was going to play, and he comes off the bench and takes 9 shots and was decent at it and had a decent overall game. Like, can't say I would have expected that. So that's a promising thing. And I think it kind of gets back to Zion, the question I feel like you were going to ask and we're going to wait a little bit is Tyrese better coming off the bench going forward? Or do we bring him back into the starting lineup and put Foster back to the bench? I don't know if I have the answer for it. But.
I'm not interested in that conversation yet. Let's hold off on that. Look at that shot distribution. I mean, you just brought up that the leading shots taken tonight was a guy who took 9 shots. I mean, like that is That's beautiful basketball, man. Like, I can't see from here the assists to shots made ratio, but it's got to be high.
19-28.
I mean, that's exceptional, right? Yeah. That's really, really good. And I'm sure some of that was just like taking the foot off of the gas there at the end. Look, I think that both of you have mentioned like the discourse. I think that like the discourse has just been weird. And I wanted to like tweet. I tweeted a little bit about it today. Duke, I had very high expectations coming in, right? In particular, two of our players were expected to be All-Americans, and two of those players have had some difficult games, especially in ACC play. And we've had some let-up spots and some spots where we've sort of won ugly, as Zion said. I think that people need to realize that it's okay to be critical. I think being critical is completely fair, and wondering what some of the potential downfalls going forward could be based on the play that we have witnessed, I think that's also completely fair. It's really just like the people who say Flip sucks, Proctor sucks, the Shire sucks, the team sucks, right? Like, those people need to just get lost. And then I also love the positivity, but also the people who say, you know, ha ha, joke's on you all for, you know, being concerned when we were 4-2 in ACC play with two quad three losses, you know, like how dare you ever be critical? You know, like, I don't think that's useful for the discourse either, right? Like, I'd like to think that this podcast falls nicely in the middle, where we never say that the players suck or do ad hominem attacks or say anything judgmental in particular about the players, just about the play in particular games.
Yeah.
But we also clearly love the team, and we want the team to be its best version of itself and what have you. I think, like, I just wish the discourse would find like a happy medium in between the like never be negative ever and the no one should ever be positive. Because we get accused, I tweeted this today, we get accused all the time. In one episode, someone will tweet at me that you guys are never critical of the team, and then somebody else will say, why are you always so negative?
Like, yo, in the same episode. Oh my God, let me piggyback off that too. Because like, I've seen the tweets, like, and me, like, people realize I'm very much, like, I've said this on this show so many times. I do not have emotion watching Duke at all. Like, I will watch Duke. Jerry McCain hits a clutch three, I'm sitting here like this. Kyle Filipowski, turnover, I'm sitting here like this. I've been trained in my just life, just working in media, I don't have much reaction, like, just naturally. So, like, people say, oh, you're tweeting with emotion, or you guys are so negative on the show. Trust me, there's no personal agendas. There's no anything. Like, we're just talking about what we see with no emotion involved. We're just basically telling you how we feel about the game.
Yeah, what we see. So, and I watch with tremendous emotion. I'm lucky my neighbors are nice. Because, like, when Roach kept making those threes like they were uncontested layups, I was hooting and hollering and dancing around my living room, man. I was so loud. I was having a blast. You know, nobody pounded on the door being like, hey, shut up in there. But when we talk about the play, even though I know emotion gets the best of me sometimes, but I don't think you will find any clip of me ever saying this player or this player X and making a judgment on the player. If anything, I defend the players all the time, because playing basketball is really hard. It's just sometimes you have to acknowledge when play isn't going well. Like, you just, and you have to wonder, how can it get better, right? That's what good discourse is. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that into the mix, especially on a day like today where Duke looked brilliant and they performed brilliantly. Job's not finished. What, isn't that the Kobe quote? Like, job's not finished, right? Like, it was a team down two starters. We did what we were supposed to do. Excellent. Yep. That's exactly what we need. Build on it. Show us again on Saturday. I think you had said before we started the podcast, Zion, that Saturday is really where we're going to see where the rubber hits the road with this team, I think, because this is a Wake Forest team that's very hot. They've never lost a game this season at home. They are beating ACC teams at home. I don't have the number in front of me, but it's got to be by like an average of 15 points or more. Like they are really scorching hot at home. So if Duke can go in there, we're the best team that will have played them at home because UNC dodged playing Wake at home somehow, that'll prove a lot, I think. That'll prove a great deal about where we are today.
Yeah, sure. You couldn't ask for a better warm-up game for it, too. And if you would have told me that going into this game that McCain would go 1 of 6 from 3 with 7 points and we'd still win by 29, I would have said no way after the way he's been playing. And just like you alluded to, Russ, with the evened out scoring across the board there, just in the, especially in the starting lineup, is just beautiful. Love to see it. And, coming into this Wake Forest game, this is what we needed. Zion, you want to tackle that one?
Oh, what, the John Henson one? Yeah. I think we got to get John Henson on the show for one. We will make that happen at least once.
Maybe before the next UNC game.
Yeah, we'll try that. I'm sorry, Russ, we got to tell Riley they're benched. I think, I think it's corny. The Jerry McCain discourse online is just very corny to me. It's always been corny. You could go back to my tweets before the season. It's like, if you're not talking about basketball with that kid, then just don't say anything at this point. Like, because the kid is one of the best players in the country. In my opinion, I think he's the National Freshman of the Year with how he's played of late. I just think it's corny to bring him nails and TikToks and whatnot. It don't matter, because if he's doing whatever, dancing, if he's twerking on TikTok, who cares? If he's dropping 35 points the next game, that's the conversation. So, I just think all that discourse is corny. And it was just seeing that from John was kind of lame, because it's like, yo, you're a former player, bro. You're better than that. You've been in these games. So let's talk basketball than narratives.
It's worse than corny. I mean, it's just the worst kind of toxic masculinity is what it is. Because, like, if it was something that wasn't dancing and painting nails, he wouldn't have a problem with it, right? Nobody has a problem when, like, guys are tweeting, like, in typical fashion, right? Or doing interviews or doing whatever. But the second it's talking about painting nails and, like, dancing on a camera, then there are dudes who are like, oh, this shit is toxic masculinity 101. And I think it's gross. I think it's disgusting, frankly. I think it's disgusting discourse. And you should be a better person than that.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to even give that energy tonight, because we won by 30. moving forward to this game, besides, I guess, who have we talked about? I guess, no, we haven't talked about anybody.
Hey, talk about Jeremy Roach.
No, I want to talk about Martin Mitchell.
Oh, we can talk about Martin Mitchell, too.
Number one, Mark Mitchell is shooting 47% from deep in ACC play, as we all predicted. We all predicted this, even though it is a low volume. I think he doesn't get enough credit, because I tweeted it during the game. I think he's our best defender still. I know, you might say Flip is the most important, but I still think
Mark, he's not. Mark, it's Mitchell for sure.
Yeah, Mark Mitchell is our best defender. I think he's deserving of all ACC defensive team. I thought he should have made it last year. But if you look at his numbers in ACC play, he actually has an argument to be all ACC too. So I think Mitchell has kind of flown under the right radar of late. And, he's kind of been our most consistent. Yo, I have tweets of me saying, for the listeners, that this guy says Zion is a liar for saying he believed in Mark. I literally said it on this show many times that I still have faith in Mark, regardless of how bad he's shooting. Like,
here's the fun fact. You want a fun fact? Is that Mark Mitchell of our starting lineup shoots has the best shooting percentage this season of our entire starting lineup, and it's by 5, almost 6%.
Field goal percentage.
He is, and the starting lineup, has the best field goal percentage. The only non-starter, you can't count Christian Reeves, he's had 3 games, but the only non-starter that shoots better than him is Ryan Young at 59%. Mark is 54%. So. And it's obviously, you could look at a shot chart and Mark Mitchell's points are going to come from around the basket, but it is, you give Mark the ball somewhere around the post, and more times than not, because it's over 50%, Mark's going to score the ball. Tonight I wanted to tweet it out. I was with a buddy, couldn't get on my phone to tweet stuff, but like, Mark in the first half was nuts. You gave him the ball and he was going to score. He had our I think it was like 10 of our first 15 or something around that area of points. And so he's kind of been that way since the beginning of the season. He had a dry stretch at the beginning of the season. His three ball wasn't falling. But I would say around since the new year, Mark has been a dog with the ball in his hands, making plays down low. And what Mark is very good at, and people might disagree with this, that I think he could be bad at, but he's very good at, is avoiding fouls when he's driving the ball. He is very good at avoiding defenders and not taking or not drawing charges. He's good at getting around guys. Whether he gets fouled or not, he is not just driving into guys with his shoulder down. He does a lot of Euro stepping and just getting around defenders. And so late game situation, Mark Mitchell is kind of the number that you might need to call to get a bucket, because he just gets to the rim at will and he gets fouled a lot of the time. So I love the way he's playing, and hope it continues, because that's a big key into March if you have a guy like that at 6'9" who can do that big time for sure.
The rebounding has been game changing. I mean, like when we can get second chances because of Mark, it's colossal. I mean, like I think it's Connor O'Neill on Twitter who has pointed out that Duke's record when Mark Mitchell scores 10 points or more is something like 29-3 or 30-3 over the 2 years that he's been here. Yeah. It's something huge, because when he is on, the team is on, generally speaking. And also I think coming into this game, he had gotten like maybe three of the last four game MVPs from KenPom. I mean, like, he's just, for this win streak that we have had, he has been enormous. He's been enormous all year. And, you know, I think he is the best defender on the team. I agree with you, Zion. I think he's got to be a first-team All-ACC defensive player. Do you know, per CBB Analytics, who the most impactful defensive player on the team is so far in ACC play?
By numbers?
By net rating, by how good the opponent's offense is when this player is on the court versus when this player is off the court, who is the most impactful Duke defender in ACC play?
I feel like it's about to be something weird, so I'm just gonna say Jeremy Roach.
That's exactly who it is. It's Jeremy. Good.
Hey, Zion, well done.
It's Jeremy Roach by a good amount, and he's 99th percentile in the country in that respect. I think we got to talk. I wanted to segue because we got to talk Jeremy Roach. You know, I said a few weeks, maybe a month-ish and change ago on the podcast that I thought he needed to be in consideration for first-team All-ACC the way he had been playing. I still feel that way. I don't know whether he'll get it. Just the raw counting stats are going to maybe benefit some other guys, but the efficiency is insane. The defensive impact, even though he's not the best one-on-one defender, what he is he's smart. He's basically never out of position. He works hard. He's very active with his hands. Sometimes players can shoot over him because of the size, but very rarely is he just going to be watching the ball. And I think one of the big reasons why he's so impactful on the defensive end is because when he's not on the floor, the team basically has two freshmen and Proctor out there, right? And so then the defensive efficiency of the team is going to dip considerably as a result of that, right? So, and the offense, I mean, I was just about to pull up what his shooting numbers are for the season. Yeah, he's shooting 46% from three.
Sheesh.
On the season, on notable volume, that is 19th in the country. He's shooting 47.4% from three in ACC play. What? You know, how do you have, like, Zion, I think you had brought up, you know, you feel just as good about Jeremy Roach making a three as Quinn Cook in 2015. I feel better about Jeremy Roach today if he keeps shooting this way, because when he is off the catch, he basically doesn't miss. Like, he so rarely misses when he is taking threes off the catch. It's like a layup. It's unbelievable.
It goes back to my point that, you know, apparently I'm looking at buckets by Bagley and all these. Someone else did it too. Apparently that I jinxed Duke when I said they were a very good shooting team.
You kind of did for a little bit.
But look what they've shot the last two games. Yeah. They are 19th. Right, coming into this game, they were 19th in the country in three-point percentage. Second in ACC, probably got to boost this game to probably go up to 15, 14. This team's a very good shooting team. I don't care what anybody says about jinx, I'm jinxing them, whatever. We have plenty of shooters that can shoot the ball. That was already known coming into the season. Now we're kind of seeing it. Jeremy Rose has kind of made himself an elite shooter. We already know what McCain brings to the table. And then when you have a big like Flip who can shoot, what was Flip shot two threes tonight, didn't he?
He made two threes.
Two for three. You have a 7-footer that could do that.
Duke's hey, a very good shooting team. How about that dunk, that around the corner dunk?
That was amazing. Caleb Foster is making 45.7% from three in ACC play, 40% on the season from three. Even Tyrese Proctor on volume is shooting about 36% from three in ACC play. Good. You know, he definitely made at least one today. Obviously, we talked about Mark Mitchell. You know, Flip has struggled some in ACC play, but even him, 36.5% from three in ACC play. I mean, like, you still have to account for him. He's not like you can't just leave him alone out there or he will make them. So, everybody can make them now that Mark can make them. Everybody can make them. It's great.
We play four guards 25 minutes plus a game. And for the season, three of them are shooting 38% or better. And like you said, Proctor is the least with 35%. And that shot is still there. It's not a guy you can just leave out there as well. So, like, and what do we always say about March, Zion?
Guards
win in March. And so that's the nice thing is that McCain can have a 1-of-6 night, but you still got Foster and Proctor there as a threat and that you can't take out of the equation when it comes to defense. So just the fact that these guards could potentially be and I get it, it's Miami, but they played well against Florida State, especially McCain. So you can have a guard or two have an off night and you still have two other ones. Not many teams in the country, if any at all, can say that they have that in their back pocket. So huge coming into the end of the season here.
I think just tonight, this team kind of proves to a degree that I don't think you can never have enough guards. You know, I feel like at points you could have enough front court players. You know, sometimes the wing does get a little clogged if someone can't play the four as well. But guard play, if you stack your team with guards, you could have an endless amount of guards and still be successful.
Shire's got a great recruiting pitch going forward, man. If he needs one for guard play, is that, hey, look at this team. We had four guards, two of which are freshmen playing 25 minutes plus a game. You want to come to Duke and take on minutes at the guard position? You come here, man. So, just awesome all around for that.
We'll have space next year, that's for sure.
Well, fortunately and unfortunately. Hopefully a big emphasis on fortunately, but
see. I guess since you say that, do y'all want to talk about the McCain noise, the first round? Because people are fully convinced that McCain is a lock to walk.
Can we all just preface this conversation real quick by saying that Zion, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think any of us have any inside information on McCain's status. I don't think that's been leaked by anybody or anything yet. So that fair enough. This is all speculation.
For the most part. Ish.
Sorry, I forgot.
Russ got sources. Russ got
insider Russ.
Insider Russ, man.
Insider Russ hears. Here's things from somebody who I trust.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, I think just everything can change with how the next month goes, right? But yeah. Like, I would be shocked. I would be really, really surprised if McCain was not, at least at this stage in the game, planning on testing the waters in the draft. I'd be really surprised if that was not the case. You know, I do think that more or less everywhere he's got first round grade and like not like 28th or whatever. Like the people who are legit have him as a very solid first rounder. Look, I think there are reasons for him to come back. I think that we could sort of dive into those in great detail if we wanted to. I think it's a very interesting conversation for a player like McCain, but I do sort of think, from what I understand, he is at least planning on, if all goes well, trying it out. That's what I hear. And I don't know, and my source doesn't know whether that's like concrete, whether he's like definitely gone. Like, I agree that I don't think anybody knows that.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to strongly consider it. I think he's going to strongly consider it. I don't think it's going to be like the second the season's over, he's like, I'm back. I love that. I hope I'm wrong. I hope my guy is wrong, but I think he'll at least have the conversations. That'd be my guess.
He's got no reason not to, right? I mean, at this point, everybody has a reason to go test the waters, but with McCain, like, you can see it and you can see the translation just from college to NBA with his hustle, his off the ball movement, just every intangible that he brings to the table. And obviously the shot is great as well. But yeah, I think with this draft class and where Jared is currently slotted at, there's no reason why Duke fans should get their hopes of him coming back next season. My one question is, and this might be stupid as somebody who watches Duke as much as I do, but I don't think he's going to, but Roach can come back one more year with the COVID year. Can he not?
Yeah.
Technically, I don't think he's going to, and I think I've heard that it might even be off the table, but like, he technically could.
he could. He'd be 4 years older than the average player on next year's team.
Hey, man. Like,
Guys on the road, man.
I would love it. I would love it. I'm not expecting it. I would love it.
If I'm Roach and I'm looking at like my options, you're not getting drafted this year. You're not going to get drafted next year. NIL is a thing. Playing with guys like Cooper Flagg is not bad for your NIL and your image. And you're still playing at Duke as a fifth year guard. Like, I don't mean to make this podcast into convincing Jeremy Roach to come back, but like, ain't a bad gig, man. Like, and you won't get the hate for me coming in next year because I already tried that and it didn't work out for me. So I will be the biggest Jeremy Roach fan coming in next season if that's the case.
But before Roach, for me on McCain, I think my biggest thing was
yes, Brandon. That,
I don't think necessarily that he's a lock to go. I do think if I had to put money on it, that McCain would be a lock to go. But no, McCain would go, but I don't think he's a lock at this point just because I feel like there's still a lot of variables just to show on the NBA level. Number one, he hasn't played the point guard position at Duke, which will have to play. Yeah, he'll have to play on the next level because, I mean, he's still 6'2", 6'3", you know, and there's not many guards. I don't think there's any guards. Maybe the closest guard to his size is Malik Monk, but Malik Monk is a freak athlete. He could get away with that. I would bet that he's gone if I had to bet. But for Roach, why not, man? Why not? Why not, you know?
Yeah, my biggest thing, and again, according to what I hear, and I also think this just goes down to common sense too, like I think that a lot of people are looking at this Duke team and projecting the next year and going, well, if you're not a first rounder, there's NIL. You're obviously coming back. And I don't think that's always the case for everybody. I think that players, just like before NIL, players have a variety of reasons why they may want to go or may want to stay. They have ideas in their head about, you know, they are ready to move to the next chapter of their lives, or like Flip last year, they want to continue their college experience and be able to, you know, develop more in school rather than trying to, you know, it can be very hard if you end up G-leagued at any point and you're not quite ready to contribute. As I tweeted before, we've seen a lot of late to mid first rounders just like not get a second contract or get min contracts because they just weren't ready right away, right? That can be really hard. So if you dig college, then staying makes a lot of sense, especially now with NIL. But some dudes also are just ready to go. So I don't think that people should be looking at this roster from what I understand and thinking, oh, if they're not a first rounder, they'll be back. I don't think that's necessarily the case. In the same way that I don't know that it's necessarily the case that a guy who seems like a first rounder is like definitely 100% gone. I think there are other factors for all of these human beings beyond mere draft position.
Right. 100%. But yeah, we don't need to turn in full NBA drafts. Still got plenty of basketball left for sure. I guess one guy we haven't talked about, I guess a lot of people probably say we should be talking about him, John Shire, man. It's been a nice turnaround, at least from what we've seen early in the season. What are your thoughts on John?
Somebody made a comment earlier, somebody made a legit comment in our show about how Shire is willing to take early season L's for late season success. And in year two, that kind of is, I don't want to call it a trend, but it has kind of been what has happened. Last year, you could say, well, Lively got caught up and he made progression and that helped a lot. This year, scheduling might be a factor in that as well. I don't have much. When you win games, it's hard to question the coach. I mean, it's really tough to be like, I think we should be doing this instead, because it's like, well, we're winning, so why would we change it? And so with injuries that we've had and the schedule that we've had, I have no complaints really with Shire. I think there's been a couple times in how we use Flip that could be changed around. Post UNC game, we talked a lot about how he was utilizing that game already, but I think getting more action for Mark and McCain isn't going to hurt us at all. And I think somebody else commented earlier in the show that when we try to force feed Flip the ball, it's not always great. I'm still fine with giving the ball in the low post, but maybe not as much on the outside. And I think if you substitute Flip's touches on the outside with Mark's touches on the outside, better things are going to happen. So, no complaints right now, but the schedule helps and they're winning games. And so I think guys are being utilized in ways they shouldn't be. And so I'm all for it.
Yeah. Schedule definitely helps. ACC helps in general. I think that, there was that one comment that we had him on the hot seat months ago. I don't think that is what we said. If you go back and watch the tape, we said if this season ends a certain way and if it continues to trend in a certain direction, then the leash is shorter than maybe what people would think because of the current state of how Duke is a big blue blood program compared to when Kay got here.
With the talent they had. Yeah.
We were definitely criticizing some of the lack of noticeable adjustments or offensive play calls that seem to be happening. That is true. I also think that like the idea that we would trade early season L's for late season W's makes sense if he's getting those L's because he's playing a deep bench.
Yeah, I didn't like that comment.
I think that comment is dicey. Let's put it this way. I don't think John would go to a presser and go like, well, clearly we lost to Georgia Tech so that we would be better later. You know, like I don't think that that's the case.
It's more so figuring things out and making adjustments throughout the year.
I do think that because he is a young coach and because his players, even though he was returning four starters, outside of Jeremy Roach, this is still a very young team. Like compared to the national average, this is a young team. So, and Flip sat all summer, right? And Mitchell had some injuries, and then Proctor had injuries in the season and what have you. Like, there's been some factors in there. I don't think that those factors necessarily excuse like the one-on-one that we saw sometimes on offense, the stagnant lack of ball movement away from the action that we saw at times. Some people will say that was the players. Some people will say the coach can tell the players, hey, stop doing that and run some plays. I think there's a lot of discourse to be had there. But, you know, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, winning cures all ills. I mean, like, if you're winning games, none of that matters. But, you know, I think for everybody who is saying, like, oh, you all y'all were like joning on Shire or whatever, we have five games left, right? The season still has to end strong. Yeah. You know, I think we set the benchmark early of like, this season needs to be better than last season, right? We need to go into the tournament with a higher seed and a better record than we had last season. We thought that was a nice benchmark of expectation, even given the Georgia Tech loss and what have you. Obviously, we weren't going to get a one seed, you know, so like, what's a reasonable expectation? I think a reasonable expectation is to be better than the previous year. So like going 4-1, or at absolute worst 3-2 in these last five games, I think is really, really necessary. Super, super necessary. And if he does, that, then great. You know, again, winning cures all ills. And if he doesn't do that, I'm sure the same people who are on Twitter going, talking wild about the man are going to keep talking wild about the man. I think there's a nice middle ground, as we talked about earlier, in terms of the discourse of what it means to have a young coach and how he develops.
Right. Yeah. I got to credit him because he's been more open to number one playing his bench, specifically Sean Stewart.
Well, and today in particular, when we were playing a shorthanded team going really deep, I thought was really smart.
Right. And, you know, that's, I think, even, you know, even though there was a nasty Twitter comment trying to say Sean Stewart stink, I was like, sometimes I don't want to entertain it, but I'm like, yo, are y'all really watching the game? Because from what I've seen from Sean Stewart the past couple of games, he's been great energy off the bench. He's made big plays defensively. He's snagged a couple boards, you know. Yes, he'll miss a layup every now and then. Yes, he'll maybe fumble a pass, you know, or be a little giddy on defense. But overall, I think he's been a positive player in the minutes he's played. So, you know,
he's a freshman. Not all,
yeah. And it's not all about scoring, man. Let's look at basketball beyond just putting the ball in the hoop, man. It's much larger than that.
In the last 10 games, you want to talk about numbers. In the last 10 games that we have played, Sean Stewart has the second best on-off stats of anybody on the team.
Yeah. Tough to complain about that then.
I mean, it's a small sample. It's admittedly a small sample. That's the counter argument to that, and I agree. But I think that small sample justifies giving him more playing time and letting him play through some mistakes because he has shown he can be a net positive.
Yeah.
We got a question here. Pulse check. I've seen people or wait until the weight gain.
Wait until the weight gain for sure.
We got a tough stretch ahead.
But this is the thing though. Even if we do lose this weight game, I don't think we're going to lose. But even if we do lose this weight game, I still think this has been a great stretch. You know, I don't think it's going to change my opinion of what I think of the ceiling of this team. I just think we'll probably just maybe be running into a buzzsaw, you know, that a team that's just great at home, you know. I don't think necessarily that's going to be the ultimate, okay, Duke lost, so maybe they're not as good as we thought. I think it's more so if Duke pulls this out, then it's like, okay, you know, we can start creeping back to this is a real championship contender team. Because, I mean, I'm not going to devalue going on the road and winning. And what is our record on the road? 7-2 in ACC play?
Something like that. I'd have to look, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm not gonna take away from that, and I think this was, even though we do have harder teams coming up, in my opinion, this was one of the harder stretches of the year because you're traveling three road games in a row. But yeah, I think it'll set the momentum for the end of the season.
I think we have maybe the hardest stretch going forward, maybe of any ACC team, because we have two road games, Wake and NC State. And even though State's not great, they're still dangerous at home, as we know all too well. And then we have two home games against the two other best teams in the ACC with Virginia and UNC. Virginia getting blown out the other day, notwithstanding.
Is Virginia up there?
They are still sure? Top three in the ACC, yes.
Yeah.
What's the record?
They've lost five, I think. Yes. Yes, Duke and UNC are at 12-3. Virginia's at 11-5.
Oh, wow. We're still there.
Yeah, they're still there. They win a lot of games. Sometimes they get blown out because they can't play offense or make jump shots. But they win a lot of games. So, you know, you can't sleep on it. I really want to see how we finish the regular season. You could lose at Wake, and I don't think that's a deal breaker either way. But it's more the cumulative effect of what these next five games will look like. That is where my pulse will really get me excited about title contention or otherwise. Mm.
Another question here. My girlfriend's parents got me ACC Tony semifinals tickets. Y'all think Duke makes it that far, or did they waste their money? That's one game, right?
One game. They should make it that far. I think that we have shown, as UNC and Virginia have also shown, that like we could just lose to a worse team. Like that's something that all three of the best teams in the ACC have been capable of this year. But Duke should be there. I would hold the tickets. Worst case scenario, you sell them. Who cares?
That's one tournament game, right? Yeah, because we automatically start
just one. Yeah,
quarterfinals. I think that's a good bet for this team. But yeah, let's look at the stretch going forward. We got Wake.
We gotta wrap it up soon, Zion.
Oh yeah.
And Ryan's computer is at three because for whatever reason he doesn't have a.
Dude, I don't want to talk about it.
He doesn't have a charging cord.
No, this man is so unprepared, man. Just it takes three weeks off and just like forgets how to podcast.
Drank too much beer today, and that's coming from me. That's saying something.
So let's quickly take a look at, I guess, the next the final stretch. I guess we're in Wake Forest, Louisville, Virginia, SC State, UNC. What do you think the record is?
Four and one or 3-2. I think those are the possible outcomes that seem most likely. Yeah.
Who are the losses to?
NC State would be my two, but
yeah, I'm hedging my bets. Like outside of the Louisville game, like those four other games, I think the odds are we lose 1.5 of those.
Yeah.
So then it just depends on probably a bounce of a ball in one of those games, whether we lose one or whether we lose two, right? It'll be something like that would be my guess.
And so, I mean, if you have us going 3-2, then yes, this is on YouTube, Jack. Then do you have us winning the ACC in the regular season?
I'd have to check UNC. I mean, UNC's got a pretty cushy one, assuming that they can beat Virginia on Saturday, which I know is never a full given, especially given the fact that Virginia is usually very good at home. It may come down to that last game. Right. Can we beat UNC at home? And I think if we can, at bare minimum, we win a share, even if we have two losses. Like, let's say worst case scenario, we lose at Wake and then we lose at NC State in the trap game. Right. And we beat UNC. I think we probably still tie for the regular season title. There would be my guess.
Oh, OK. What you think, Ryan?
My computer about to die mid sentence, but I said 4-1. I think we go 4-1 with losses on the road. I don't think we lose at home again. I'm not scared of Virginia at home. I'm not scared of Louisville at home, obviously. And I think this team could take care of UNC at home with a better game plan, especially in Cameron. It's different. So 4-1. I think there's a chance this team runs the table, but that you're going to Wake on Saturday is big time. And then that NC State game, looking forward to a potential that UNC matchup is always a tough one. So one of those two, I have a feeling we're going to lose, but it would suck if we dropped two out of this next five. So
the Wake game is the hardest one left on the slate.
In my opinion. Yeah, I agree.
For sure.
I agree. I have us going 5-0 if we win on Saturday. But yes. yeah,
That's probably fair. We have presently, via KenPom, a 19% chance of running the table for the rest of the season. So that's not bad. It's like, not bad. Considering the opponents, that's pretty good, you know. Like, but yeah. we'll see. I think 4-1, 3.5, 1.5 is better. You know,
we'll see. Torvik says 1-point dogs. We're never the underdog. That's what you know. But yeah, before these guys,
KenPom has Duke 1-point favorite for what?
Oh, we're 1-point. Oh, KenPom. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like Torvik has dog. Torvik is a little lower on Duke than KenPom is.
Okay.
Except for now, we're 9 on Torvik and 8 on KenPom. So
it makes sense. And they're probably a little higher on Wake after the last game.
Yeah.
Yeah. But right. I think maybe we're back on Saturday. I think, fellas, big game. Why not? Y'all ain't doing nothing. We'll be back on Saturday. Y'all ain't doing nothing, bro. Come on. we appreciate y'all for tuning in. The Crazy Cast is back. Shout out to the Field of 68.
Home field.
Go get your gear. Go get your merch. Crazy is the code. Always the code.
Yes. Crazie.
You know the vibes. But yeah, we'll catch y'all next time on Saturday. Big win tonight. Go Duke. We'll see y'all.
Peace.